October 1st, 1997.
I love that that was their future. Their future of apocalyptic, like, disaster was only 7 years from when they came out.
Yeah, they were like,
the
dude.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You're listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
Nolan.
And this is episode 225.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is our Patreon pool.
Double yeah, pool, yeah. Pool.
And the new Doom and the new Animal Crossing both released this past week. But while everyone is talking about that, can we instead talk about Star Wars Episode One Racer?
No.
That we played for the N64 a few months back. That this week we all learned is coming now to the PlayStation 4 and the Switch.
Yeah. So, yes, we can, because it implies something else that I'm more hype about than anything. Does this mean we're going to get...
Star Wars is real?
It,
it does. Yeah.
Is that where you're going?
That's where I was going. But
that's
also
been true, obviously, for a long time.
It's just a long time ago, far, far away.
Oh,
but, like, is this going to bring N64 VC games to the Switch? Or is it just a remake?
For starters, I don't know what VC is.
Virtual Video console, games. Noob.
Oh. That is video games.
Like, that would be skipping. Well, no, that'd be next in line. Right now we have NES and
SNES. No. That's not what's happening. They're porting this. It's like, I doubt that's what's happening. They're porting this game from 1999, was it? 2000? They're porting this game to the, but not only to the Switch, also to the PlayStation 4. Like, people need it for their home console.
People loved it. Right? Like, when we did the podcast episode, everyone was like, can't believe you hated this, Nolan. And I was like, can't believe you think this is good. That's so random to me. And that makes no sense.
I agree. It makes no sense at all.
Kenny, do you remember playing it on our podcast?
I do.
Do you have fond memories or just memories?
Just memories.
Like, make a new racing game with Kylo Ren and the new characters.
Right.
Make a new Lego pod racing game. A new pod racing game with Kylo Ren?
Not pod racing, just normal racing.
Regular cars.
Bicycles.
Regular cars.
With Kylo Ren.
Bicycles on Tatooine.
They, like, stick their arm out of the window with a lightsaber and hack each other.
Well, for those racer fans, it looks like you're in luck, because after 20 years, your subpar racing game is coming out of cryogenic sleep to a world gone mad.
That was really well done.
Like in our retro game of the week, Crystallis.
Overview.
Crystallis is an NES game that came out in 1990. And it was developed and produced both in-house for SNK. So they're a big company, and they worked on developing and pushing it out at the time. SNK is known mostly for, I would say, King of Fighters. That's their 3D fighter, kind of like Tekken. And Metal Slug. That's another really big series back in the day. And this game is an RPG slash action game where you play as a character that is now in the future. So cryogenic sleep, Dustin was hinting at part of the plot there.
Wow.
It was a segue.
It was a segue, for those slow listeners out there.
Segway, which could be the racing game, the new Star Wars racing game.
Kylo Ren on a Segway. Please.
Did you make a lightsaber noise, or was it a Segway noise?
I did, and
it's the same noise.
So it's an NES RPG, and it's more of an action game, I would argue, and we'll talk about that. But this game actually has pretty heavy plots. It's got more story than I expected it to have. It was more of a cult classic, I think. From what I understand, Crystalis was not a hit, much like some of the other major RPG games when they released.
And but, can we talk about that real quick? Why sure. Why do you think, I guess maybe it's too early, why do you think it wasn't a success? Mm. I think in part, and this might just be me because I've heard other people that liked it, but I think the box art went way too hard.
Do you think so?
Like, I think the fantasy super aesthetic fantasy that it gave is like super Conan the Barbarian type it stuff. Is. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I felt like I would have passed that
like,
by.
You feel like people judge books by their covers?
I judge games for sure by their covers.
Of course. But yeah. this is in the heat of rental time. And so people are going by the box art, what they see on the shelf. And I don't know. I think that had something to do with it.
That's a good argument. I think the box art could have been way cooler now that I know what the game's about for sure. But also maybe they just didn't market.
Or the game could have been way cooler if they pushed it to the box art level.
They maybe didn't market it very well. I don't know SNK super well, but like they I don't
Metal
know if
Slug
they,
was before this, yeah?
Yeah, it was. But yeah. What I think
89
and that game was super successful. So I don't
it was
don't
arcade know. Though. So they did a lot of arcades. This wasn't.
Right,
maybe
right,
that's
right.
Part of it.
That's true. Maybe they weren't familiar with the home console yet.
Or maybe gamers just had really bad taste at the time.
Probably not that.
Metal Slug was 96. I just want to say that so no one thinks I'm
an idiot.
96. Okay,
hey, we promise we know what we're talking about here.
We know what we're talking about.
Okay, so the plot is actually kind of heavy here. There's more of it than I expected. And I will give it to you right now. So in 1997, there was a nuclear war that destroyed everything. Pretty much. I don't know what was up in 1990 that had the developers like,
Oh, you're talking about in the game.
I was talking about real life, actually.
I thought 2020 was the apocalypse.
I love that that was their future. Their future of apocalyptic like disaster was only 7 years from when
October 1st, 1997.
They didn't give us any kind of like leeway. They're like, guys, 7 years. That's all you got.
I wonder if big fans of the game were super like prepping for this date.
Yeah, probably. After playing, they're like, man, they told the future.
Yep.
So in this story, the world ends in 97 and we lose to whatever really happens. I don't know. Nameless character, the anonymous protagonist, gets frozen in cryogenic sleep when this war is going on or when it's over, so that later in life he can awake and prevent it from happening again. That's the idea. And there's some of the survivors of this great war built a tower in the sky that floats around like a spaceship. And the idea was to like save themselves from the evil that was on Earth now. I don't know the whole story of why that was.
It makes good sense when you think about it.
I mean, if I knew how to build a floating tower, maybe I would and protect myself. So they were very well advanced, you know, society at the time. Now, when you wake up, it's like prehistoric kind of fantasy times. And when I first played the game, I thought it was a time travel thing. I didn't quite read the story very well. I was doing a first play. So I was like, why are we time traveling? I don't know, back in time or what, but this is after the events, and I guess 100 years in the future. I don't know. And you are now in a society that has revived like magic and studies magic. They've abandoned science and technology that was once part of society, and they're just like magicians now. And it's up to you to prevent this evil dude who has taken over that floating tower that has a bunch of guns and science and technology. And he's going to destroy the Earth again or something. So you have to save the day.
That was the most succinct plot summary.
Thank you.
But yeah, kind of strange. Not early 90s, I think the whole science magic thing is not unheard of. It's kind of a story trope. But they do a fine job with it here. I agree. More story than I expected, but like told better than I was expecting.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, agreed. And one of the things is I didn't even know some of that that you said, not because I didn't read, but because of the way that they present the story in this game is unique in the sense mm-hmm. that they don't lay it all out at the beginning to tell you everything. They give you a little bit of the background, and then you're finding out the story as you play. They've done this in other games, but you don't know who you are. You don't know why you're chosen or special. I don't think you even know about the guy that has science. Like I don't know that yet in my, so you right. find it out from talking to people, not from cutscenes. You find it out from talking to people and from evolving the story and kind of from town to town and from boss to boss, you're finding out a little bit more of who you are, what has happened and what you need to correct in the yeah. world. Let me say one last thing here, is that this is a Patreon poll. Once again, last week, we said that it was submitted by Coconut Wizard and Amarillion, but also what I failed to mention was that it was also submitted by Ben, Swift Pilot Ben, another Dang. One of our patrons. So it was wow. submitted by three different people.
Okay.
I'm sorry for missing that last week. Patreon's doing a weird thing right now. I don't know. They're having issues, but so is the world. Welcome to 2020.
Gameplay.
So this top-down action RPG looks a little bit or feels a little bit maybe like Zelda, maybe like Secret of Mana, but certainly not like more typical turn-based RPGs. You are really doing an action-style sort of overworld where there's enemies roaming around and you're fighting them in real time. That's everybody. That's bosses, that's enemies, everything. And so you're equipped initially with just a sword, and you quickly learn that your sword can be powered up to give you a ranged attack, and then you can also run up and just sort of melee your guys. And like a lot of games, you are finding better equipment and better armor and shields, but also learning magic and giving yourself a lot more abilities to not just fight certain enemies, but to progress through the game.
So you said it's action RPG. That was one of the first things that took me by surprise when I was watching Nolan's first play. It yeah. happened to both of us. It's funny because within the first few minutes, he gets out of town and he sees an enemy on the screen. So he runs straight into it, yeah. thinking that he's yeah. going to go into a battle. Combat.
That's how it works in the overworld in RPGs.
He ran into it like two or three times. He's like, oh, okay, you know what? I got to fight him right yeah. here and right now.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that took me by surprise too. I was sure that you were about to run into that creature and get into a battle, but that's not what happened.
Yeah, the like story town elements of it feel more like a traditional RPG for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Like a lot. And so it's sort of somewhere in the middle. Like it's neither one style or the other, which makes it feel a little bit unique, but I thought in a really nice kind of way.
And can we talk about that Zelda comparison real quick? I'm a huge Zelda fan. I'm not offended at that. I saw that elsewhere online, that comparison. And why not? I think it's actually really similar to Zelda in some aspects.
Yeah, just it's certainly a different game. It's not like puzzle driven. It's, you know, the mechanics are really different, but there's definitely similarities.
There's similarities to the first couple of Zeldas. We're not talking about
sure.
This right. ain't no Ocarina.
Ocarina.
I've heard that it is a, now follow me here, that it is a cross between early Legend of Zelda and Fallout. And if you think about it, it post-apocalyptic. Homeboy's waking up in a vault. Homeboy doesn't know his name okay. or where he's from or anything like that. And he's coming into this mutated world with mutated creatures and like all of this. So I can see the cross between Fallout and Zelda. It doesn't have gameplay like Zelda, like Fallout. Yeah. The gameplay is more like Zelda. However, the world and the story and some of those things are very Fallout-ish.
You would need way more rat punching for it to be Fallout.
You played 1 minute of one Fallout game and think that rat it's all punching. About rat punching.
Well, you also don't save bottle caps but I could see the story inspiration kind of touching there.
The first set of story progressing triggers is not clear.
No.
And could leave you clueless for hours just walking around.
That definitely didn't happen to me in my first play.
That happened in the first play. You'll watch various cuts of Nolan not knowing what to do at all. Because
I feel like there were much harder things to figure out later than that, than that first one.
I don't think so.
No. There.
The people in town tell you exactly what you need to know.
The people in town tell you a few things, but certain things don't even show up until you get those things. So if you don't have
the ordering of things is a little unique.
You have to have an item in your inventory that you purchase from the store that you have to get money from defeating the enemies outside of town to make appear a sleeping guy that you have to wake up with that one-time use item to then get a key from a different guy to be able to unlock the windmill. Like, that, you have to do things in a certain order. If you walk into the cave at first and find a sleeping guy, that would be a little bit more helpful. But he's not even there until you have the item to wake him up and have talked to the sage in the cave.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but he probably should have showed up beforehand. I'll give you that.
Got him.
The townspeople give you the clues. They're literally there's a sleeping guy in the windmill, and then the other guy is like, the alarm is what you need to wake up sleeping people.
Who said that? I didn't find that person.
No, it exists in town.
It probably does, but here's the thing. I don't know why Kenny's doing this. Kenny and I, for our first play, probably both used a guide.
I didn't use the guide early on. I came back to a guide later, but I got through this part naturally. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how or why.
Because you with the NPCs, you got to listen to the NPCs. Talk to all your townspeople and then engage.
You do. Yeah, you do.
You can see a guideless experience with my first play, and it's not clear. I'm with Dustin. Like, you have to talk to a guy to make him appear, the sleeping guy appear. But then I was like trying to use they kept saying, use your power. And I was like, okay, the charge on my sword that I also had to talk to someone to get. And that didn't do anything. So I didn't even know about the flute until I found a guide.
I will say that later there were some puzzles that I got frustrated enough with. I'm sure I could have figured out, but it was like, I referenced the guide. I tried to do a purist playthrough, and then I just felt like it was going to be so inefficient that it really was worth looking up some of those things. But again, like, we have a short amount of time to play, and I don't know.
We have a short amount of time to play, so thankfully the character speed is remarkably fast.
Bro, I very welcome here. I loved it.
Oh, it was nice.
It was great. It was
so welcome versus so many games of this time.
It was problematic because you're running into enemies really fast.
Oh, that's a different story. We could talk about that.
But we'll talk about hitboxes later, because hit detection here is, abysmal. However, the character walking speed, native walking speed, no boot upgrade, no anything, is
sprinting.
The fastest walking speed I've ever seen. Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, because
why don't they have
every
that?
Every other game back then needs to just ratchet their speed up, like, 30% to 50%.
Do you think that other games slowed it down so that they could have a boot lengthen upgrade. Their games?
I don't know.
Oh, that's interesting. Just
they
to make it
they
seem
didn't
like
trust
it's longer.
Their players to not be able to handle it. I don't know.
Either way,
it
was so
it.
Cool
it felt
here.
So good.
It did. But the hitboxes.
Okay, so
did not feel good.
The hitboxes deals with the combat here in this game, and the combat is top down driven. It's not turn-based cutscene stuff. It's you're actively swinging your sword at these enemies that are walking around slower than you. Most of them, some of them are way faster, but some are slow, and you're swinging your sword, but you're walking so fast that one, you're going to run into them a lot on accident, and two, the hitbox detection is just lying based on the sprites.
Yeah, it's not real.
Yeah, it's not real.
I found myself almost always just doing ranged attacks, especially early until
I got
hard,
though.
Better.
That's just,
oh, it was slow and inefficient. But
no, you have to. I think that is why. I mean, I think we mentioned it, but your sword gets upgraded. First of all, I think there's 5 total swords in this game, and they're all elemental based.
Yes.
That's kind of like the progression in this game. You're having to go to various locations, get a new sword, and then get the upgrade to that sword, which allows you to charge it more, and then release this elemental magical projectile. And so But that is how you're supposed to play. You're not supposed to just use the sword up close, because if you do, you're going to that you're going to take a lot more hits and a lot more damage and die a lot more easily.
There's a rhythm to it, I discovered.
There is a rhythm to it, because you cannot charge while you're walk running. So you have to kind of do this stutter step and while you're holding down the charge until it's finally charged, and then let it go when you're directly in line with an enemy.
Or even the slashes, I'm saying, is a rhythm. Like, if you want to do up close, if you hit them, there's knockback. Like, kind of significant knockback in this game. So, like, you slash them, they get knocked back. Hopefully, they get hit. And then you move forward a little bit and do it again. Spamming it, you're going to die. Like, spamming doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Well, and like you said, the hit detection hitboxes are awful. And so there were many times. In fact, I tried to take a screenshot. I don't know why. A screenshot didn't work. I needed to do a video capture to see. But there's this one, it was in one of the caves, and a guy was trying to strike with a sword. And we were boxes apart, like pixel, like we're not close. And his sword doesn't even finish striking. It's by his side before I'm dead.
Yeah.
And thankfully you've got a health bar. I don't know if we mentioned that. Mm-hmm. You've got a health bar, so it's not one hit kills. Your health is being depleted. There are magics that you get throughout the game. And so you can use one of those to replenish your health.
Yeah. It's like the first one.
Or the magic that made it kind of game changing for me was, I believe it was called teleport, where finally I could teleport back to villages that I've been to before, which super was super
nice.
They did because really nice quality of life stuff. Yeah. Not just the faster movement, but town portaling and...
Especially because I don't think that you get a ship or anything, which you do in some of these RPGs to help with quality of life.
You're faster, you walk faster than a ship.
You walk faster than an airship.
That's true. You get some other modes of transportation as the game goes on.
The tower. I have no idea.
Probably. But so, they just do some nice quality of life stuff. The saving, even
menuing.
Oh, yeah, saving. NES, baby. This game.
It was just nice. I don't know. Maybe there's saves on other NES games, but it felt, it felt kind of advanced.
Right. Usually it's go to an inn, run all the way back to a town or go talk to the king and save at a specific save spot that's universal. That can get so onerous, but save the game is just awesome. And then you hit that select button, got all your menu right there, quick change of your items, which is super important that they did that. It's not quick change, but it's important that they at least tried to make it somewhat easy, because you're changing items in this game a lot.
Yeah, you get
Dustin
you
talked
to.
About yeah, he talked about these elemental swords, but they not only change elements, but they change elements that can attack certain enemies or not, can help you progress through certain obstacles or not, and you're picking up items that have to then interact with NPCs and magic and all kinds of stuff that you are swapping items constantly.
Which we need to address. Did you like or dislike that certain enemies could only be affected by certain elemental swords?
That's fine with me.
Okay.
Having a type, I don't know, it's kind of, I'm used to Pokemon stuff.
But it's, in Pokemon and in other games, usually you can at least do damage other elements.
Yep. I like the concept. I didn't love the implementation. I do wish it had been an efficiency thing, not an invulnerability thing.
Well, yeah, I just think, especially when you do have to go into the menu every time, switch the sword, and not only switch the sword, but then switch the power up, the bracelet as
well.
Also
swap your balls out.
You said that.
Orb, we can call it an orb, whatever.
A quick swap would have been super nice, like a select button that cycles through something, that'd be sick.
But we can't be picky, we're NES controller.
Yeah, that's my point, I'm okay with the types, I like the effort to add the variety. What I had a little more issue with, that I thought was a little stupid, they handled progression kind of weird at certain places, there are certain bosses that don't take damage unless you're a certain level.
Even the normal enemies, I think, if you're under-leveled versus...
Which is not cool.
They're invulnerable until you go out and grind lower-level enemies.
Because I'm like, why? Why is that a rule?
It's not kind of stupid. That's really bad, especially if you do not have a guide. And I didn't look at the manual. Maybe it hints towards that, but... if you don't know and then you just get to a boss or an enemy and they're not taking any damage and you cannot possibly beat them, that's just frustrating.
It's really frustrating.
There's no reason why this game needed to do that. No. You just make the boss difficult and then you have to be a better player. Right?
I totally get he doesn't take as much damage until you hit a certain amount of damage threshold. Go buy a better sword or item or go grind and level yourself up. But the full-on just you hit a ceiling that's unexplained until you go grind it out. Now, that being said, I didn't feel like there was as much mandatory grinding in this game as some. It was probably somewhere in the middle. I did find I had to do it, though. Just playing story and doing the dungeons naturally didn't keep me leveled high enough. But no I way. Also didn't find that I was doing like a half hour or an hour of I'm going to just go out and grind for a while to get ahead or to stay at the level I'm supposed to be.
I did a half hour. I was grinding. I found a good area where I could line up these enemies that were coming after me, and then with my sword beam, take out four or five of them at a time. So I was getting some pretty significant experience. And then money at the same time, I was kind of lacking, and I didn't upgrade a lot of my armor, or I guess you don't have to upgrade weaponry, do you? Because you're getting your swords. Right, that's pretty good.
It's kind of progression locked.
But I did end up getting a shield, and I think I got like just a base armor, mm-hmm. but I didn't spend much money other than that this past week.
I didn't either. Like I bought the flute and maybe some herbs, but you start getting herbs in caves like for healing. So I was just like, I grinded quite a bit. You're saying you didn't have to do a lot. I feel like I had to do quite a bit.
Kenny, that's coming from Kenny, who would sit on Dragon Warrior and grind right. for an afternoon.
It's not an extensive...
He's like, a slime puncher.
It was a problem in some games that grinding was the game. And this certainly and this wasn't that.
But well, grinding was fun in this game.
Sure, grinding is a part of these RPGs. And like... not even they're not apologizing for it. It's like that is a part of this, but I do agree that it wasn't problematic. But it is there for sure.
Yeah.
Aged.
1990 NES got a lot of limitations simply because you're pretty much working with what 8 megabytes of memory. I don't know what you're working with, but you're not working with much at all. And I was pleasantly surprised and approved of what all they were able to fit in this game. This is not a Super Nintendo RPG. This is an NES RPG. Yeah. And I've played many NES RPGs. And for all that they fit in here and made look good and sound good, like even the menu, it's I don't think it's like pleasing to the eye, but it's very clear on what is what. Every item and weapon has not only a unique name but a unique design.
I'm taking it further. I think it is pleasing to the eye.
Okay.
Certain areas in particular, like this game is one
I was
of
saying
my,
the menu in particular.
Oh, you're saying the menu. Just to be clear. sorry yeah, it's just kind of boring.
But the world,
oh gosh,
oh yeah, take it.
One of my favorite presentations on the console, I think. Like, the Poison Forest. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Beautiful.
Purples and blacks and greens.
The
and
grass,
then they've got,
like, in the fog. Dude,
levels
it was,
of stuff.
It was and on the SNES. Music, I swear to you, it was on the SNES. Because, like, what? It doesn't look like NES.
I have no idea how they were able to fit all that in there.
It
and
looks
then,
so good.
Now, here's the thing. They did reuse dungeon tile sets quite frequently, changing the color. So you're done. But they do that in all the other games. Dungeons always look the same. What am I saying? But these overworld locations that you're going into are so unique. Even the ice area later where you're in a mountain, all of that is unique. And the areas that you're traversing have different... dangers. And so like in and around the poison forest, there's a poisoned ground. So you got to get these rabbit boots to hop through it. So you're not taking sustained damage.
And you have to get the gas mask so you can even,
and you have to get the gas mask so you're not poisoned. And then over in the snow area, you've got these like ice ramps. Yeah. So if you do step on them, you're sliding down and not going to be able to get back up. So even in these worlds, they're fully realized environments on the freaking Nintendo Entertainment System. Yeah.
The theme is like on point every time with the presentation. Like if you're in snow, there's going to be some snow specific items. There's going to be a snow specific weapon and power that is really sick and different. Like they just thought about all these things and made it look very, very good. I'm so blown away that it's on the NES.
Another thing that I thought was pretty remarkable this early was the variety of enemies. So each boss performed wildly differently.
They were unique.
However, the enemies themselves were completely different. And so some was Tony the Tiger. Nolan fought a lot of those in his first play. And then you've got the slime type things. But then you've got these axe throwing somethings. And then you've got... What else do you got? You've got
jumping spiders.
The worst. The bats are the worst. But like,
yeah, all the flying things were terrible.
All the flying things.
Dude, that's what I was talking about earlier, being way faster than you. They're like keys on crack from Zelda.
And they can fly through walls, yeah, so they don't have to abide by the same rules you do.
It's not okay.
However, there are, my point being that there are a variety of enemies. And yes, so even if you do have to grind, that's fine. You're being able to fight different things over and over. Even in some of these early RPGs that we played, you've got, you don't have a ton of variety, especially on a given landmass. And I guess, I don't know if you have tons here, but they just looked and functioned differently.
Tony the Tiger.
Correct me, Kenny.
Some of them were just like reskins, which is fine, but you get same enemy, different color, which totally works, especially when you're doing the elemental affiliation thing. Like, I get that, and I get a good variety of enemies. I did feel like the type of fighting didn't stay as fresh as you make it sound like, though. It was a lot of the same thing over and over again. Even your different attacks are pretty much like hit them with a sword or have a ranged attack that just is a different element, but it's really
like
the same
attack. I like that simplicity, though.
But that's action RPG, right? Like, you are just going to be button mashing.
Zelda. I mean, Zelda, you have a ton of items that you're implementing, but like, I like the simplicity here of just like, you have a ranged option and you can swap between the different weapons. Like, honestly, it's more than it seems. You're slashing and you're shooting, but you have four different ones that do different things. And
so some of the magic made it feel like I had other options, but it definitely felt a little repetitious to me. The little like tornado thing you could summon was super cool. But like the normal ranged attacks, just, I don't know, they left me a little bit wanting.
I could see that.
Okay, before we go on, even though Dustin, you want to close it out, we should talk about the music in this game because we didn't, and I do think it's worth touching.
Okay, so what, you loved it?
I liked it. I thought there was really good variety, and there was one dungeon tune that I swear is has been ripped off and is now a popular song by that one really angry girl. What's her name?
Avril Lavigne?
No, that sings all the dark music.
Oh, Billie Eilish?
Billie Eilish. There's a piece in one song that reminds me of a Billie Eilish song, and
I'm a bad
guy.
Yeah, that's the one. Anyhow, I thought the music was pretty good. Nice variety.
I agree. I think all of them kind of stood out to me. Like, I was bobbing my head on most of them. I didn't feel like that NES repetition that we talk about sometimes. It was good.
I felt some of the repetition, especially on that main overworld stint, but that's simply because you are spending some time grinding. And since you don't have the turn-based luxury of hitting a new soundtrack once you go into battle, it's kind of just the same. It does become fairly repetitious. However, each area that we've already talked about graphically looking appealing. See, I thought in my mind we had addressed music simply because the whole vibe and ambiance that is created in those new environments all have their own sound as well. And I thought, just remarkable. The game came out for the NES in 1990. They did I think it's considered a remake in 2000 on the Game Boy Color. Fans of the original didn't love it. It was just an upgrade to some of the graphics, gameplay, maybe even added a dungeon.
Reworked the story. I think one of the complaints was a lot smaller field of view, which would be especially frustrating when you're moving as fast as you are and having to do ranged attacks. So I can't even imagine that.
And then in 2019, it is now on the Switch. You can play that. Oh. In fact, yeah, some of our listeners did this week. They played on the Switch. You can purchase, right? Does that change? I mean, that's
you can
huge,
buy
right?
it, or it's part of the NES Online feature.
I do not know. Kenny, do you know?
I don't know. I didn't look it up. I think surely it's a standalone, like separate.
It's on the SNK 40th anniversary collection.
Gotcha. Yeah, okay, so you buy
purchase
it.
That.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say that would have been so dumb of me not to take advantage of this game if I had it on my Switch.
Yeah, still, that would have been amazing. Gosh. If you are looking for an original NES cartridge, you can get that for under $20, so not bad at all. The complete set is $50, and then if you want a completely new copy, untouched, well, that's going to be around $200. So again, if you knew NES games at this point, you're going to be paying them.
Yeah.
If it's still in the plastic, though, you can be certain that it doesn't, like, still in the original box, that it doesn't have coronavirus on it. So buy the $200 version, unbox it, and play it safely. That's my recommendation.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not the game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. Does require 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. Kenny, what are your thoughts on this game?
I was pleasantly surprised. Not surprised that it has become sort of a cult classic. It wasn't exactly like any other game in the genre that I had played, sort of pieces of some. You could see that things were inspired from or borrowed from other games, but that's fine. But they did a really unique thing. The game itself feels cohesive overall, good story, fun interactions. Sure, there were some annoyances, swapping weapons all the time, some of the hitbox things. There certainly were things that didn't make it like perfect, but totally worth knowing about. I had a great time playing it. I think if people like RPGs in the NES era and haven't played this one, they certainly should. So, New Game Plus from me, for sure.
Nolan, you want to go next?
Sure. A resounding yes in GP status from me. I had heard about it, knew it was a cult classic, whatever. I didn't know anything else like about what you're doing or what it's about. But, I mean, the story is actually not bad, and in fact, more of a driving force than I expected, which is welcome. The gameplay is familiar to me because I like action adventure games, and it just felt natural and simple and fun all the way through. They kept me interested by changing the theme up, by incredibly detailed NES graphics. Like, we didn't talk about the pixel art, but all the items have their own like artwork, and I'm a huge fan of that, and they all looked amazing. Like, all the swords looked cool, and the boots and stuff, like, oh my gosh, this does not feel like an NES game, and I want so many people to play this game. I think it's incredible, and I give it NGP status easily, despite the hitbox problem and some of the other issues I had. Like, Those things like quickly faded away in my mind as I kept playing this week.
I agree. It's got its problems, and I do think there are some unforgiving decisions that the developers placed in this game that was not smart. Maybe it's just a sign of its time, the reason why they did some of those things. That being said, it is a work of art for 1990 NES, and there are hours and hours and hours of fun to be had of interesting and evolving gameplay. So I agree with the boys that everyone should find a copy and play this, and I don't know why it's not mentioned as much as some of the other NES RPGs. Is it one of the greatest RPGs of all time? I wouldn't say that. No. Is it one of the greatest NES RPGs of all time? I would say it's definitely up there in the list. And it is New Game Plus certified. But what did you think? We had some write in. Ben said, this game was part of my childhood collection, and I have lots of fond memories of it. I actually borrowed it from my cousins and never returned it.
Nice.
Way to do it.
I do that
at
all
the time. I thought of it as a Zelda clone. It never stood a chance of being as good as Zelda, but it is a solid entry in the top-down action RPG genre. I see it through a big set of nostalgia glasses, so I can get past its flaws like the poor hit detection and constant weapon changing. I'm glad you guys got to play a game from my formative years of gaming, and I have full confidence it will earn NGP status.
Well, here's your proof that nostalgia is not the only deciding factor for you about this game. We all never played it and thought it was, we had very similar thoughts. So, yeah.
And thank you again for being one of the few that submitted the game for the Patreon poll. Garlisle said, this game has been on my radar for years, so I sat down and played this game start to finish this week. A bit disappointing in some ways after all the hype. Caves reusing tile sets again and again, a couple obtuse puzzles, easily missable but important items, etc. And I desperately wanted an SNES controller for quick swapping weapons and having dedicated spells and item buttons. Still, those complaints feel pretty small in the face of what's otherwise a very solid game. The use of things like teleporting, quick movement, and even a checkpointing system make it age decently well, too. While I don't know if I'd call it the best RPG on the NES, I can certainly understand why some would argue it is.
Yeah, I think a good summary.
Garlisle, I agree. Like, those complaints aren't, like, they start to seem smaller and smaller the more you get of this game. That's what I had just mentioned, too. And it's like, I don't know, you consider the NES and the limitations and you're like, you know what, like, I forgive you. This is a very cool game.
Zach wrote in and said, I always remembered Crystalis as Robot Zelda because I could swear the main character was a robot. I love the graphics and music. He explained later that in his memory, the character was gray and very robot. I don't know. It's hot pink, isn't it?
Yeah, purple.
The little cutscene, though, where, like, you're coming out of cryosleep or whatever, looks real futuristic, robotic. Yeah, I totally get it.
Okay.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked.
He said, I love the graphics and music, especially the animations and sound of charging the sword. I don't love the grinding and the somewhat obscure next steps, but I feel like this is standard for NES RPGs. Same goes for a lack of a map, but I am so in love with this game right now. I will definitely be finishing in this time. So make sure you guys select a bunch of RTSs, walking sims, and games with turn-based battle mechanics for the next few weeks so I don't feel compelled to play along.
Oh, dang. I want to see the end. Like, I'm not gonna. Yeah. I have to be honest with everyone here. I'm not going to.
Because 20 hours, I think.
Yeah, but I totally want to. And I want to watch someone do it because it's like, I'm having so much fun with it.
I want to do it. And if we do get a slow game this week, then I will. Because not only, I mean, I'm working from home. Oh, and the world is falling apart.
A really boring randomizer then.
Yeah. All right, we had some others write in. Kevin was one of them. Basically, he said that he tried actually playing this blind, kind of like what Kenny did. And as you can imagine, he got stuck a few hours in. Poor guy couldn't. I think he was stuck between a boss and on one side of the map and some enemies on the other that he couldn't do damage to either. So he also thought that the music was repetitive and bad, so he didn't give it his NGP status, which is interesting.
Dang.
And then Coconut Wizard, another person that submitted the game, said that he played Crystalis before he played Zelda, and the game is a great mix of NES hard and NES fun and will always hold a special place in his heart.
Nice.
So thank you all for writing in. Thank you for playing this game along with us this week. For now, even if it's just for a moment, let's set aside Crystalis and let us randomly select the next game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days from our Retro Master list, which you can find on our website. Let's find out what game we're playing. Randomizing now. Well, guys, we might have some additional time for Crystalis this week.
Oh, no. Why?
Because even though we're all locked at home, we're going to be playing a game that was developed by PopCap Games in 2001 for the browser.
PopCap?
I like early 2000s PC, maybe.
It's a browser.
The game did sell over 10 million copies and has been downloaded over 150 million times.
What?
We're going to be playing this week.
What is it?
Bejeweled.
Oh, my gosh.
That was a hype game.
No, it
wasn't. Bejeweled.
It was
the predecessor to Candy Crush.
It so isn't hype, Kenny.
I mean, it may not keep our attention for like a whole week, but I guarantee if you don't come into a weird
No, it's good.
I'm too cool for it. And I am try and actually cool play this it. Game and have fun. You're going to have a good time. Maybe casually.
All right, Crystallis round two.
Instead of this, Nolan, should we play Words with Friends?
Draw something.
Draw something.
Which are also both great games. You're going to expand your horizons.
Okay.
You're
going
to get some new horizons.
Find a copy of Bejeweled. It's not good, Kenny.
It was good.
Find a copy of Bejeweled for the computer. Just go go into the browser and play Bejeweled. It's also on phone and iOS, Android. It's on Facebook. So find a copy of Bejeweled this week and play it along with us.
Did you know that if you are a patron, you have some benefits waiting for you in Discord, mainly a VIP channel and a name color change. So take advantage of that if you're not. And if you're not a patron, you can still join our Discord by going to ngppodcast.com and clicking join us on Discord.
If you want to know how to become a patron, check out patreon.com and join the likes of some of our favorite people who support us at the producer level, like Ben, Dear Baby, Garlisle, Corey, Maxima, Shauna, Zach, and Zion. You guys are wonderful, and we so appreciate your support.
You can find us on our social media. That's Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. Those links are in our show notes. Listen directly on any podcast provider of your choice, and make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode, as always, was edited and produced by our good friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we log on to Facebook and play Bejeweled. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
I'm General Kelbesk.
Don't know who that is. Is that the bad guy? And this has been New Game Plus Ratchet
Edition. Ratchet Edition.
Kenny, if you want to be a part of the podcast, you can hop on or whatever time. Or you just want to be a patron today or supporter.
Yeah, you guys just summed it up really well.
No. Don't follow up with me. Just wait. And if you don't have to, Kenny, but I'm inviting you back into this thing if you want to hop in.